welcome to A Bookish Home. I'm Laura Zara Kopinski. This week, I'm thrilled to welcome a fellow Anne of Green Gables fan to the podcast. Sarah McCoy is here to discuss her new book, Marilla of Green Gables. This prequel brings the world and characters of Ellen Montgomery back to life. If you've ever wondered about Marilla's story before Anne Shirley arrives, and that time she called John Blythe her old beau, you'll love Marilla of Green Gables. Sarah McCoy comes at this novel with a true love and deep knowledge of Montgomery's characters and the Prince Edward Island setting, and it was such a delight to talk with her about all things Green Gables. I hope you enjoy our conversation. Sarah McCoy, welcome to A Bookish Home, and congratulations on the new book, Marilla of Green Gables.
Thank you. I am so thrilled to be here today to talk to you about the book and talk to your readers and just sort of have a little Green Gables celebration, right?
Yes, it's so nice to be talking with another Anne kindred spirit. And I just loved the book. It was so fun to read. And for people that don't know, in the novel, we're really able to sort of re-enter the world of L.M. Montgomery's Anne of Green Gables only through the eyes of Marilla when she is growing up, well before Anne arrives. So it's such a special reading experience. And to start, I would just love to hear how you became a fan of Anne of Green Gables and what that book has meant to you.
Absolutely. My first memory of Anne of Green Gables wasn't even a memory of reading the text. It's actually this sort of bleary childhood, you know, the best ones from childhood are sort of that magical bleary memory. And it's of my mother sitting on the edge of my bed at night reading to me. And in my mind, I saw these, not words, but pictures of Green Gables. And I, at the time, I was pretty young. I think she said I was maybe 4 or 5. And we were living in Germany. And my mother's Puerto Rican. So my mom speaks Spanish. We're American. My dad's an American. And he speaks English. And then we were living in Germany. We were stationed there as Army. I was an Army brat. My dad was an Army officer. So all around me was German being spoken. And so my mother is a career teacher. And she's very much about the development of young childhood acumen. And so it was very important to her that I, you know, be educated correctly. And frankly, I was starting to mix up languages. I was mixing Spanish, German, and English all together. And so that made her really worried that when we got back to the States, that I would have a problem back in school. So she became this vigilant reader to me in English. So she would read English books to me every night. And she is a huge Anne of Green Gables fan. And so, you know, like any mom or any parent or any person who's nurturing a young creative mind, she read the books that she enjoyed, right? That she mm-hmm. loved and wanted to read along with me. So that's my first memory of Anne of Green Gables, is my mother reading it. And I think it's important to note that those first entries through the story portal, those are the ones that really stick with us, right? Those are the ones that mm-hmm. sort of make us into literary people in terms of loving to read, and for a writer, loving to write those stories. And I also think, you know, even as adults, for people who don't have anything to do with literature, still those fundamental readings of their childhood, because those are all a part of every childhood, is reading and books. So as they influence everybody as an adult. And that's why I think it's so literature is so such a part of every person, even if you don't think. My brother, for example, is an aerospace engineer, right? And he doesn't think he likes reading. He's like, oh, I'm not really a reader. And yet when I talk to him about like some of, well, what do you remember from childhood? He's like, oh, I guess I do remember reading Winnie the Pooh, and I remember, and he does, and those things influence us, and those things are mm-hmm. part of the makeup of who we are as adults. And so Anne of Green Gables happened to be my portal into the story world. It was one of the first times I remember sitting in my bed and feeling like I was here. Like, this is what, you know, I'm physically experiencing, but I'm not here. I'm on Prince Edward Island. I'm in the house with Anne and with Marilla. And that was very empowering to me. I didn't actually read the book for myself until I was older, obviously, and I knew how to read. And like I said, my mom's Puerto Rican. So my Titi, my Aunt Gloria, she heard that I loved Anne of Green Gables. And so as a gift at Christmas, she gave me a copy of the first three books in a volume set. And so I just remember being ecstatic to get it and then taking it into my room and opening it. And it was like paper, like a Bible, Laura. It was like that thin, you know, and it was tiny, tiny print. And I remember being absolutely terrified that I would never be able to read this book. I was so desperate to read. I would never be able to read it all and by myself. Like, it was just too hard and difficult. But I so wanted to. I knew the story and I saw the images in my mind and I just wanted that for myself. I think a lot of readers and writers are introverts. And so while I am very much an introvert. And so while I had had that sort of story community experience with my mom, I remember really wanting it alone. Like, I wanted to read it by myself. It was super important to me to have that connection to Marilla and Matthew and Anne Shirley and Rachel and Green Gables for myself, like quietly inside. And so I was desperate to read this. And it took me a year, a full year, to read the first three books. And then I remember having that first feeling, and I'm sure you know this well, of accomplishment in that I just read this humongous Bible of a book, you know, and it's like you went on an adventure and it was a challenge and you completed it. And it was so richly satisfying that I was hooked. Like, then I was like, I wanted big books. Like, I was like, give me big books, Mom. I want to feel that feeling again. And again, I share that because Anne of Green Gables was my portal. First off, I remember, you know, that was the first time I felt out of body in a story. And then it was also the first time I felt that sense of accomplishment, of reading accomplishment and satisfaction. Maybe if it had been another book, I would have a different connection to the Green Gables world. But this is the book that really sort of ushered me through growing up. A little bit after I finished reading that and was totally obsessed with the series. Do you know this? Are you familiar with the Anne of Green Gables PBS production with Megan Follow?
Am I familiar?
I should have known.
Have watched them way too many times. I've made my husband watch them.
Bless you.
I watched them so many times growing up over and over, but then I even watched them. We went to Prince Edward Island when my husband and I were still dating, and we camped there, and I made him watch it outside on a little DVD player at the campground because I felt that he couldn't go to some of these sites without, you know, at least watching the movie. I'm not going to get you to read the book, but at least watch the movie.
You know what? I did the same thing. My husband had not read or watched anything. He didn't even hardly know. He was like, I think I've heard of that book, Anne of Green Gables, until this past New Year's when I made him, like, instead of going out and doing something like, you know, chic on New Year's Eve, I took him to my parents' house in Northern Virginia. My mother, like I said, is obsessed as I am. And so we put on the Megan Follows, Colleen Dewhurst, Anne of Green Gables, and he watched it. That was the first time he had watched it with me. And, you know, he was like, she's so precocious. And I was like, no, she's not. She's wonderful. Like, I mean, that movie just was, it came out right after I'd finished reading the series as a child. And it was like and I'm sure you had the same experience, everything in my world just went Green Gables. Like, my neighborhood mm-hmm. was talking about it. It was on the news. It was on TV. It was, you know, at school, the teachers were talking about it. It was just everywhere. And so it didn't feel like, oh, one book and that's cool. You know, it was like the world knows about mm-hmm. Green Gables and loves it as much as I do. I had birthday parties after that that were themed. I had tea parties themed.
Oh, I love that.
Oh, I had for Christmas that next year, and we were military, so we didn't have a whole lot of money. And so going to the store to buy a new dress, honestly, it didn't happen very often for me. We made a lot of my clothes. And so I went to Joann Fabrics with my mom. It was a huge deal. We picked out expensive satin, blue satin fabric and a pattern with puff sleeves, and we made the dress. On a slideshow that I do on tour, I have a picture of me walking down like the church aisle, just proud as a peacock in my blue Anne of Green Gables dress.
Oh my goodness. So this gives me a lot of hope, I have to say, because I'm the mother in this case with the Anne of Green Gables obsession, and I named my daughter Anne. She's a toddler. I was reading her chapters of it when she came home from the hospital. So I'm super
excited. Like, this is a young, fresh mind that is clearly being brought up absolutely correctly.
Well, it gives me hope that your mom's love of it didn't turn you off of it, that you really embraced that. So that makes me happy. And it must make her, I mean, what better thing to happen to a fan of Anne of Green Gables than to instill that in your child, and then they grow up and write this wonderful book set in the world that Ellen Montgomery created. I mean, has that been so wonderful?
She was pretty ecstatic when I came to her. It was a little over 2 years ago, and I said, so I just got off with my editor, and I think I'm going to write a story called Marilla of Green Gables. And she completely flipped out. I mean, she was, no. And she, after I wrote it, she was, because I knew she was the perfect first reader, she was the first person I gave the rough first draft to read.
Oh, that's so special. So,
also because she's a school teacher, I knew that she would be critical. And because she is an Anne. My mother is very much also, let me tell you, a Marilla. Like, she, I was the whimsical, like, la, 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 head in the clouds. And I specifically remember her saying, Sarah, like, as a very young girl, Sarah, get your head out of the clouds. Sarah, focus. Sarah, my mom might have loved Anne of Green Gables, but I think, like, a lot of us, you might share this, I know I feel this way, we were all sort of Anne girls when we were younger, and the older we get, we kind of become more Marillas. And I don't, mm-hmm. and that's what this book for me is showing, that that is not a bad thing. Anne could not have been the productive, successful, beautiful Anne that we love as an adult Anne if she did not have someone like Marilla who grounded her and said, you know mm-hmm. what, let's get our anger under control. Let's get our outbursts under control. Let's get our imaginations under control, and let's focus ourselves so that way we can be something. We can go and be the star pupil in our class. Marilla's the one who encouraged that. We can do plays. Marilla's the one who said, you know, I support you, go on stage. And I'm talking about the books, because I know some of these things aren't in, aren't in all the adaptations and movies, but they did plays. She had a book club that she, a story group or story club that she started and did. That was all Marilla really encouraging that sort of focus.
That's so interesting you say that. I think that's part of why I was so excited when I heard about your book, because Marilla has been on my mind since I became a mother. And I know you talked to Anne. I know you talked to Anne Boyd Rue as well. And part of what I loved chatting with her about was, you know, it's the same thing. You go from looking up to Joe and Little Women to then rereading it again as an adult and really relating to a lot of the stuff about Marmee. It's the same thing with Anne. Yeah, it's the same thing with Anne and Marilla. And so it was so interesting to start seeing that world through Marilla's eyes. I loved that. Perfect timing for me as a reader.
I love that it is perfect timing for so many people have said that to me, oddly. It's like a kindred thing, you know. And I do wonder if that it's partly because, you know, well, it's been around for generations and people for generations have loved Anne of Green Gables. But that PBS generation, right, the Megan Follows generation, we're all coming into that, like we're into that motherhood melody, you know. And so right now we're all sort of like, oh, my goodness. And the practicality of Marilla is wise, it's wisdom and it's appealing. And also it was important for me to show that Marilla, the more I dug into her and started to really try to figure out who she was and what made her tick, I thought about it and thought, a woman like Marilla could not have embraced a fiery, dreamy young person if she did not relate to her in that way somehow, right? Because if you've never had dreams and you've never felt like, oh, a desire to just sort of, I don't know, to be elsewhere or do bigger things or whatever, then when someone comes to you, a young person, and says, I desire to do these things, you're like, I don't get it. Why would you do that? So I felt like Marilla had to have, in her past and childhood, have been a little bit like Anne at one point. And the things that she experienced growing up and the challenges she faced and the traumas she went through, that's what changes us all. Because I think we're all innately born to be believers in the unseen and the magical and these realms that we want to believe in. I think that's the nature of... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, well, right away, you know, that got me thinking. One of the things that really struck me right when I started reading Marilla of Green Gables, there's this part at the beginning where we see Marilla sort of sneaking off. You write that she's going to idle the day away. And she goes by the brook and, you know, she's sitting and sort of dreaming and, being very unlike the Marilla we know from Anne of Green Gables, but she's, I think, 13 at the time. And it's so interesting to see that side of her. And
that's important to show that. But even in that, she feels guilty about it. And I think that's a little bit of a difference from Anne, is that Anne didn't feel guilty. She embraced it and loved it and said, like, put flowers in my hair and, like, spin around, you know? I feel like Marilla felt guilt about it, that she needed to come up with a purpose. She needed to say, oh, I was collecting herbs for dinner. That's what took me out into the forest. Like, she needed to give a reason, you know, for being imaginative. And that's, again, sort of a bittersweet pill there. That's like a heartache. Like, oh, a child really shouldn't have to come up with an excuse to be a child, right?
Well, the other thing I thought is so interesting is that there is a real passage in Anne of Green Gables that sort of hints at the story you tell in your book. Could you talk about that part where we sort of get a hint at Marilla's past life? Because I always did really think that was intriguing reading it growing up, too.
Which part of her past life? So do you mean like her love affair?
Gilbert's father, they talk about.
Yeah, that's in, I think it's chapter 37. And it's just, she's talking to Anne and she says something about John Blythe was a nice boy. We used to be real good friends. People called him my beau. And then Anne says to her, oh, in true Anne fashion, oh, Marilla, and what happened? And and then that's the thing. This is such a juicy, I mean, Ma Montgomery writes this juicy little, you know, interchange between Marilla and Anne. And then it's like she drops this juicy fruit and walks on with Anne to do Anne things, you know? And I, as a child, remember stopping right there on that page and thinking, with Anne. Oh my, what happened, Marilla? What happened? He was your beau? And if I always thought about it, and maybe this is my analytical side of my creative mind, but I thought, okay, so let's think about this. Gilbert is a cutie. We all love Gilbert. I love Gilbert. Everyone loves Gilbert. Yep. And if his father, she's saying, there's another passage where she says he was handsome and tall, John Blythe. And I thought, so he was handsome. So if he's something like his son, then he's handsome too. And a handsome guy like Gilbert or John would not have fallen in love or been engaged in some sort of romantic way with a woman who was stern and mean and ugly and unfriendly, like the Marilla we meet, you know, at the beginning of Anne of Green Gables. And so then it made me start to think, well, who was she that he would have been, you know, attracted to her and that they would have had love between them? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, even at the time I hadn't started writing yet. So I was like, well, even if it were puppy love, you know, like what? Mm-hmm. There had to be a chemistry there, which means that she had to have been attractive and she had to have been alluring and beautiful in some way. And like all little girls, you know, love is pervasive. You know, that's going to happen to you no matter who or when. That's part of being human, is that you love. And so I really felt a desire to tell that story and to let Marilla have her love be voiced and be shown, and that side of her, that soft side of her. So,
well, I'm so curious where the process took you from there. Like from that moment of, I really want to delve into her story, and we have sort of this hint of her past. How did you approach this in terms of being true to the characters and research you must have done, and where that sort of crossed with, you know, filling things in with your own imagination?
Right. I decided, well, first off, I do historical fiction. So a lot of people have asked, well, is it difficult that you already knew what happened to Marilla? And no, actually, it reminded me of any other historical fiction I've written where we know the ending of World War II, right? We know the ending of the Civil War. We know, and those are events, but for people. So I wrote about Sarah Brown in my last book, The Mapmaker's Children. I know the facts of her life. I know how she died. I know what happened there. It's the holes. It's what's not on the page that makes it fiction, that makes you able to dream into those areas and to come up with the story. So I sat down and decided, well, I read, first off, Lucy Maud Montgomery's journals. I wanted to get a sense of her voice. That was important for me, too. And then I went back and I reread the series with the first few books where Marilla is, I don't want to, anyone listening who hasn't read the series, I don't want to give away, but she does pass away. So, I read all the books up until she passes away, and I highlighted each character. So, except for Anne. So all of Marilla was in purple. Everything that was said about her, everything she said, every description, every opinion that she had or that others had about her, every little – so like in one of the – I think it might be Anne of the Island maybe. There's one little line like in the whole book that made a huge difference that someone said, oh, yeah, Marilla Cuthbert, she was of the Johnsons. And I was like, oh, well, you know, like things like that, you know, like
we're the Johnsons.
Super important, right? Like these are super important things to make it authentic to Maud Montgomery's description of this character. And so I did the same for Matthew. So I underlined all the things about him, and the vernacular was particularly important. So Matthew says a lot of, I don't know. She writes him saying a lot of very terse, I don't know, soft-spoken things. In contrast, Rachel Lynde, I highlighted in all yellow because she's very chatty, which I found incredibly interesting because she is the one who sort of scolds and disciplines Anne Shirley, right? When she first mm-hmm. comes. and is like,
oh, I loved seeing her as a kid in the book. Those are some of my favorite scenes.
Yes. And people, I thought it was interesting because Montgomery wrote her very much like Anne. Their dialogue is actually very similar in their chattiness in all of Montgomery's work. And so I found that really interesting. Mm. And so anyhow, I went through and I put together all these character traits for each one. And then I sat down and I looked for the holes, right? So all these, like I said earlier, juicy nuggets that Lucy Maud Montgomery wrote for Marilla, I put them all down together, and then I said, okay, narrative, where are we going? How do we get this story on the page? And then I dreamed in the in-betweens of what happened. At the same time, I had to keep in mind that so these are fictional characters on a fictional Green Gables. Green Gables is not a real place, no matter what anyone says. I went to the island, and I spent a month there researching and finishing the book. I wrote the last chapter and the prologue on the island, and I went there to not just research in the archives that are there, but to walk the grounds that Montgomery walked while she was writing this, and to meet with the family members that are still living on the island and get their blessing. That was super, very important to have their blessing. And so when I did that, I found out that the Green Gables that we all see when pictures are put up of Green Gables is Green Gables Heritage Place, which is actually not where she wrote the book and not where she lived. She lived next door, and I'm sure you know all this because you were there. She lived mm-hmm. next door on her grandparents' farm in the McNeils, and that is just ruins now. And that is where the White Way of Delight was. That's where her garden was. Her orchard was there. The apples were all there. And then next door, she had to cross the log bridge and a brook to get next door to her cousins, the McNeils. And that is where that site got the permission to call themselves the heritage site. And they actually, in the 80s, redid the farmhouse to make it look like Anne of Green Gables because they did some filming there. And they do a wonderful job. All the sites do a wonderful job. So there's McNeil's where she lived, the ruins. Next door are the McNeil cousins. That is now the heritage place you can go visit. And then there's Silverbush, which is a little bit farther away. And that is where the
Anne. I loved that one.
Yes, that is where the mm-hmm. Anne of Green Gables Museum is. And she had her own room there, and it was her aunt, her favorite Aunt Annie Campbell's house. And she spent so much time there. From her window, she could look out and see the Lake of Shining Waters. The Campbells that now live there are the ones who own all the rights to Montgomery's, like, dolls and merchandise and books and all that. And they're the ones who kind of control her legacy. George and Pamela are there, and their brother and sister. Funny and strangely enough, brother and sister. Pamela is unmarried, and she lives at Silverbush at the Anne of Green Gables Museum and runs it. And then George lives outside, but they both come in. He comes in and does like buggy rides for people, and they're like the nicest, most wonderful brother sister. You know. They're amazing. So they embraced me and they let me come and ask questions and do a lot of research there. So all three of the farms have elements of Green Gables because she made mm-hmm. up Green Gables. It doesn't exist. It's all in her books only. So
that's what I thought was interesting when I visited. I kept sort of being on the hunt for the different elements because it's true. And then there's her birthplace. Mm-hmm. And I do want to mention, if anyone's interested, I'll link in the show notes. I did a post on sort of making a bookish field trip to Prince Edward Island and seeing some of these sites. So people can,
that's perfect.
I'll link to those. But I'm curious, was there a particular spot that sort of felt the most magical to you, even just like doesn't have to be one of the farms in particular. Yeah, just where you felt the most kindred spiritness.
You know, no, look, and that is a real thing. So yeah, I totally know what you're saying. I actually felt like full body chills at one time when I was walking. I just gone down Lover's Lane and I was in the Balsam Woods. And I don't know what it was like. It just felt so spiritual, if I can say that without sounding cheesy. Mm-hmm. But it felt
nope,
so.
I totally understand.
Yeah, it was like the mm-hmm. brook was bubbling and I could hear it. And the trees had that you know, of the leaves. And the sun was sort of modeling through. And there was a marker in front of me that said that this, you know, it was like a quote from Maud Montgomery and something about this is where she felt the most alive and she felt like the Balsam Woods were speaking to her and that, you know, here she came to open her imagination up and I got it. Like I just felt full body chills. Like this is something is here that's beautiful. You know what I mean? It was just this beautiful mm-hmm. moment. And that's where I think I felt the most kindredness in that. And I think that went into Marilla of Green Gables. There's a lot of woodsy scenes there. Mm-hmm. And that's part of it. And, you know, not to give anything away to readers, but, you know, that's part of why I set some of the more romantic stuff where her, you know, her love is, I don't want to give too much away, but that comes through in this sort of magical woods where it's just, you know, the idea of being hidden in a place that opens you up to the impossible, which love is kind of one of those spiritual, you can't just rationally understand it sometimes. And it's just is. And so that's, mm-hmm. I think, why I set a lot of those scenes in that context.
Well, the setting really comes to life. You really do feel like you are back in that world, which is such a gift. And I'm curious, not to jump too far ahead, but are you going to revisit that world in any more books, or do you think this is this is the only one?
This is the big question right now. We're all sort of holding our breath, to be honest, to see if I can get a little bit like publishy here. But my publisher, HarperCollins, William Morrow, and my editor, who is a huge Anne fan, a huge Kindred, we're all sort of waiting to see how readers embrace this. If they love this book and it does well and readers, you know, want more, then I, you know, between you and me and everyone listening, there is between part two and three, this book is broken into, Marilla of Green Gables is broken into three parts. So between part two and three, there's a 20-year gap. And I could not write part three without knowing exactly what Marilla went through during that 20-year gap. And there was so much. I don't want to give. There was so much that happened that my editor, that we said, it's a whole nother book, but I can't do, like, it would have been a double, it would have been like an 800 page book, and that's no good. So I trimmed it and I took that whole chunk of 20 years and put it aside. And so
it's so interesting you say that, because as I was reading, I was like, but no, I want to know everything that happened here. Yeah. So
wow. We're.
Oh, that'd be a great another book.
Yeah. So we're, again, I'm waiting to kind of get a green light or what. I'm waiting to see how, you know, if Kindred readers out there, if they all come together and want more Green Gables, then I am ready to write it.
I think that's going to happen. I think you can really tell as you're reading, that you as an author are one of those kindred spirits and that you come to this with such a love for the place and the characters and know them so well. So I can't imagine this not being embraced by that community. And I, for one, am clamoring for more. So I would love that.
I love hearing it. I mean, it really does encourage me. And I think we're all just hoping so much because we love Green Gables so much. And I have I've always wanted more, you know? I think that's what a lot of us feel, is that we read the series and we just wanted more. And then when every adaptation that came out, we were like, oh, good, more. And even if, you know, for people who might not like some of the adaptations, we still love, you know, we still embraced it because it was like, okay, more Green Gables.
More.
Yeah. And so I've written this book and I love it and I want more. I want more as a reader. And I think that other Kindred readers feel that same way. So, we're going to wait and see. I mean, the book's been out a week, about a week and a little over. So we're at the very beginning of this adventure and I'm looking forward and ahead and just, I'm hoping for big things. So,
well, I'll be crossing my fingers. And in the meantime, I always love to ask, authors, for other books that they're reading that they would recommend. And for you, it could be something, some that are Anne related or anything else you've been reading. Is there anything you'd want to recommend to listeners?
Oh, sure. Well, I'm like, where do I start? I think, for a nonfiction book, if you're really into Green Gables and you want something, there's a new book that just came out. It's called The Landscapes of Green Gables. And that looks phenomenal. It's got pictures of PEI. It's just in all these little stories and, you know, like tidbits. So that's a really good nonfiction. Right now, in terms of fiction, I actually just finished reading Kate Morton's newest book, The Clockmaker's Daughter. And because I wrote a book, The Baker's Daughter. And then I was like, oh, well, The Clockmaker's Daughter. That sounds like fun. So that was excellent. And then I also read my friend, who I love her dearly, Patty Callahan Henry's book, Becoming Mrs. Lewis. That is excellent too. So those are two new ones that came out last month.
Oh, great. I'll definitely link to those in the show notes for people to check those out. I'll link too. I saw you had listed some other Anne books that you'd read and enjoyed. And one was Liz Rosenberg's House of Dreams, which I really loved too. And I have a podcast episode with her. So I'll link to that as well. If people want to hear more about that. That's sort of a biography of Lucy Maud Montgomery for young people. But I think adults would really enjoy it as well.
Absolutely. I think all of these books, if they're done right, then they're good crossover books. They were meant to be shared with your daughters, with your nieces, with your, you know, with young minds coming up. So that's perfect. And I love linking and recommending other authors. I think that's so important for us to champion each other. So that's perfect.
For sure. And I will also link to your events calendar. And as I was saying before the podcast started, I'm really hoping and crossing my fingers that a New England leg of the tour gets added.
I have some friends in Rhode Island, like bookish people that do events up in Rhode Island and in Boston. So I would love to go up and visit them. I think that would be a lot of fun. I hope so too. I would love to meet you.
I would love to meet you as well. And I think you would have a big turnout. There are lots of devoted Anne fans around here that I think would be really excited. So I'll put in my plug for a bookstore or library stop here.
I will pass it on to my publicist and say, let's do something. Maybe in the warmer months, like in the spring.
I know, right?
Yeah.
That might be good. Well, thank you so much for coming on. It has been so much fun to talk with you and to be able to connect with another kindred spirit.
Yes, this has been lovely. And I love what I hear about your daughter. So I want to hear how she enjoys the series, and just, that's a beautiful gift you're giving her.
Hopefully she winds up feeling that way. But yeah, I'm excited to get to keep sharing the book, as I'm sure lots of listeners are. Excited to pass that on to the next generation. Well, thank you and good luck with the rest of your tour. And again, just congrats on the book.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. I'm sure we'll keep in touch.
I hope you head over to your local library or bookstore to get a copy of Marilla of Green Gables. And in the meantime, you can enter to win a copy of the book. Head over to Instagram or Twitter. I'm at A Bookish Home, and you'll see the details for entering the book giveaway. You can also click the link in the show notes at abookishhome.com for all the information. That's where you'll also see a link to all the books mentioned in this episode and to Sarah McCoy's website, sarahmccoy.com. You can also find Sarah on social media. She's on Twitter and Instagram at Sarah M. McCoy. If you're enjoying the podcast, please share it with a friend, take a screenshot and share it and tag me on social media. And you could also rate and review the podcast in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts to help other people find the show. Thanks for listening and happy reading.